Hello and welcome to Tech Weekly, direct from Guardian Towers in beautiful downtown London. And if you get that reference, I'll give you a fiver. I'm Alex Krotowski, and today on the pod, I'm joined by the illustrious Jemima Kish and Charles Arthur, who've both traveled over the river and through the woods to get here. Thank you both very much for coming all this way.
I hope I can follow the gingerbread trail back to King's Place.
Indeed. We are still in Farringdon, which is where the Guardian has been, but the offices have moved elsewhere. Charles, did you experience anything fun on your way over here?
I went on the bus for the first time in ages, actually.
Number 63. Yeah, that was great. We're so rock and roll, you know.
Well, funnily enough, this week's penny pinching program aims to give all fair weather technologists the 411 on how to survive the credit crunch. It could very well be riding the number 63 bus. We're bringing in our safety net expert, Ryan Carson, from tech blog Carsonified, to break down what the spiraling stock market and plunging pound actually mean for you. And for the sake of escapism, we're looking at the content which traditional portals like MSN are producing to ensure that they stand out in the crowd. But is diversification the best path in these lean times? Put your bank statements down and keep listening to find out. It's all happening on this week's Tech Weekly. Ouch. After a buoyant series of predictions from ourselves and an optimistic technology sector, it seems that the bad times everyone else is having has caught up with our little technology industry party. Last week, startups like photo sharing site Flickr, music network Last.fm, and Yahoo Innovation Incubator Brickhouse started hemorrhaging staff, suggesting that the extremely thin bubble that was the Web 2.0 movement was even closer to bursting. Smaller companies have been feeling the pinch for some time, but Ryan Carson, the man behind Carsonified, has a few tips for folks who are keen to keep positive, even while having to streamline staff. He's on the line. Welcome, Ryan. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. Pleasure to be here.
So, Ryan, you unfortunately had to lose some people from the company in order to stay upwards and afloat. It was quite a meme at the time, and we actually spoke about this last week on the program, about how we liked the fact that you were so transparent and said, we really don't actually want to do this. And I suppose my first question is, how is there any way for other small web companies to avoid the fate that you reached by having to get rid of people?
Well, the tough answer is probably not. We decided to let three of our guys go, which was really hard because there were only sort of 10 or 11 people go, because we wanted to be careful to protect everyone else's job. And it's more of a precautionary measure, and that's the trouble, is everybody is making precautionary measures, which means a lot of people getting laid off. And I think the best thing that small companies can do is actually return to their startup roots. I think at Carsonified, we took a hard look at the company. We realized that actually we had strayed from the very beginning, when we were sort of lean and mean and sort of, you know, careful about our spending. And the best thing, first of all, to do is look at your profit and loss and statement and just go through all the little things and just think, gosh, you know, do we really need, you know, this little service, or do we need to subscribe to this magazine, or, you know, can I ride the bus to London instead of the train, and really cut those little things. And obviously, the last thing you want to do is let any of your staff go, but sometimes you have to.
Ryan, does actually cutting the little things make any impact? I mean, you know, if we're straight about it, if you cut a member of staff, then you save on their salary, the national insurance costs, various related costs. Isn't that surely the sort of place to really start looking if you are thinking about cutting costs, rather than saying, do we need three magazines or two?
Well, sadly, yes. It's a very effective way of cutting your overheads. But I think, though, that every director or founder has the duty of trying, at least, you know, to say, listen, I care about my staff and they're relying on me. So you're right. Of course, you know, saving, you know, 50 quid here, 100 quid there, it doesn't make an immediate effect, but it definitely will make an effect, you know, over the next 12 months. So if you can, you know, cut those little things, then it will add up. And that's what I'm saying. I think a lot of tech startups, including Carsonified, had sort of forgotten to be, you know, very frugal. And unfortunately, it's bitten us in the ass.
Well, Alex mentioned the closure of Brickhouse, Yahoo's kind of startup-esque innovation centre. And Yahoo obviously is a very different kettle of fish to Carsonified, but I was wondering about the impact on innovation budgets of cutting back, because it seems to me that that would be one of the first places that doesn't deliver a very obvious return on investment in the short term. Is that something that's at risk, do you think?
Ironically, no, and this is the weird thing. So unfortunately, we had to let Elliot go, our star developer, because the fixed cost was too much. But we're actually still going to build a web app with him. And one thing I'd suggest with people is think about sort of changing the way you work. And if you have, for instance, developers or designers that aren't sort of bringing a lot of revenue, then ask them if they'd be willing to go to contract basis. And instead of being paid directly, you could do things like revenue shares. So with Truve, which is our new web app, we're doing a deal with Elliot where we said, listen, can't afford to pay you right now, but are you willing to take sort of, you know, a decent cut of the revenue per month forever? And then if we ever sell the application, then we'll give you a nice fat cut. And of course, he's excited about that. So I think that's kind of a clever way of doing that. And I see more and more people doing this. So I don't think innovation is at all going to suffer, bizarrely.
Well, it's interesting that you say that, because I think a lot of people, I have the sense that a lot of people are going to start playing it close to their chests, looking at what content or what facilities or what applications or whatever is going to sell. And from your point of view, what do you think are the things that are going to sell in this market? What do you see are those tried and trusted, perhaps, or perhaps those innovative ideas, or those things that you think will bear this industry through this tight time?
Well, it's going to be stuff that helps people make more money. So I think folks who, interestingly enough, I think web design studios are not going to see a whole lot of hit, because everybody else in the world is realizing that websites are the most measurable form of advertising and marketing they can do. So it's going to be things like, you know, let's invest in online, actually. So a lot of design studios will be picking up work from more traditional print studios. You'll have any sort of service that helps you work quicker or smarter. You know, I was chatting to Jason Fried, founder of 37 Signals Online, and I sort of said, how is this whole downturn affecting you? And he said, you know what? It's not, because we have a recurring revenue model, so people pay for our applications per month. So if we saw no increase in our revenue in 2009, it wouldn't make any difference to us. And because people are relying on their products to manage projects, et cetera, they're unlikely to cancel. So I think anything sort of internal that's helping people work faster and smarter should see, you know, a lot of stability, if not an upturn.
And what would be your advice to people who get laid off? What's what should their path forward be?
Well, the first thing to do is start making friends. Go to all the meetups in London, contact people you used to work with. Basically, let everybody know that you've been made redundant. It's not shameful. It's normal. It's happened to a lot of people. And then, you know, ask your boss to help you out, because let's face it, you know, he or she owes you. Say, you know, I'd really appreciate some recommendations. And maybe ask them to blog about it. Maybe not quite as spectacularly as I did, but...
I thought you handled that very well, actually, Ryan, I have to say. I didn't think it was that scandalous.
I think we're
Do you think there's a gap between the US and the UK and the way that people deal with being made redundant? You think it's a bit more of a stigma in the UK?
I think so, unfortunately. I'm American, but I've been living here for 8 years. And the Americans are kind of naive. We're optimistic and naive, and we tend to think, gosh, you know, that sucked, but you know what? I'm going to figure it out. And everybody sort of feels that way. And unfortunately, over here, it's a bit, yeah, people sort of tend to think, oh, it's a black mark on my record. And that's just something I hope that people can get over. The best way that we try to do that with Simon and Elliot and Dom is just to say, listen, guys, you know, we love you. We want to take care of you. Let's help you connect with other people. And on the blog, saying, listen, it's not their fault, you know. But yeah, it is. It's an unfortunate stigma.
Well, thank you very much, Ryan, for talking with us. And if you're in the same boat and have any top tips, do let us know at guardian.co.uk/techweekly. We'd like to hear from you. And for more news from the front, I'm afraid it's not very good. Having looked at the script, here's Jemima with the latest headlines.
Virgin Media launched the UK's fastest ever broadband service this week with a 50 megabit per second service, fast enough to download a full-length film in 3 minutes. The launch comes as regulator Ofcom comes under pressure to open Virgin's network to competitors. It's just a short while since net neutrality legislation failed in the US, but Google is already trying to secure priority treatment for its own traffic. The topic will be one of the first big technology challenges for incoming President Barack Obama. Lycos Europe is to be liquidated and the firm's domain registration business sold, shareholders decided this week. Lycos was once the most visited website back in 1999, but has been losing money for years after failing to capitalise on web advertising booms. There's concern over the future of Flickr, one of the last remaining jewels in Yahoo's crown, after the layoff of popular designer Georgina Oates and two colleagues. The redundancies are part of more than 1,500 at Yahoo in total and include high-profile creative sections of the business, including the closure of the innovation project Brickhouse.
So, Jemima, tell me about the net neutrality issues, what happened in the US? When did this happen?
Google was a relatively high-profile company that was campaigning for net neutrality. So that is every person and every company on the internet would have the same access. All of the companies and publishers and individuals, you know, you'd all be able to distribute stuff on the same web rather than having big companies paying to have faster services, which would obviously penalise bloggers and really small companies. Now, suddenly, the net neutrality legislation has failed. Google, according to the Wall Street Journal, has been lobbying ISPs to try and see if it can negotiate, you know, priority on traffic, which is the complete opposite of what they've been campaigning for. It's very, very naughty, but it's not finished yet.
It's a very interesting reversal. And when I was in the States last month, there was a lot of talk about this so-called technology czar that they're looking to fill. The boots. And certainly at the minute, there's some interesting issues with net neutrality in terms of the Obama transition team, because we've got two people who are closely involved with net neutrality. We've got Kevin Warbach and Susan Crawford. Kevin Warbach, incidentally, is a World of Warcraft player and has a level 70 mage.
Whoa.
So the geeks amongst us are over the moon that we've finally arrived in positions of power. But yeah, so these people are very, very closely involved with net neutrality. So then it's interesting to see how, first of all, why the net neutrality issue failed. Secondly, whether, in fact, it will be readdressed come Barack Obama's time. And third of all, who will be the person who's being put forward for the czar position? Because as far as we know, the Google CEO has said, no, he doesn't want the job. So, you know, what's going to happen coming out of that?
But I mean, addressing the middle one of those about the net neutrality, I would have thought that this would get pushed again because it's basically anti-competitive. If a big company can say, you know, put my video through because I'm paying you money, and obviously all the big ISPs in the States would love that because that's more money for them in a marginal business. But it's very difficult for startups then, which have a new idea, a new business model to push through and to actually make an impact. And I would have thought that Barack Obama is really going to be pushing for any sort of enterprise encouraging thing that he can.
Well, speaking of startups and those that have made it good, you can't deny but say that something like Flickr had the opportunity to become something so big because of this notion of net neutrality that people could get through and do big things from, you know, from a small purse. But it's a little bit disturbing to think that my entire Flickr stream could disappear. I've deleted all of those photos because I felt that they were safe in a digital space. So what's going to happen?
That's
with
very
Flickr?
Brave. You mean you don't have a backup on your computer of all those photos?
No.
I think there's going to be good business in writing Flickr backup apps in the next few months. Mm.
Flickr downloader.
Yeah, well, I sort of have a feeling that Microsoft might go for the business because it would be such a thing to have that sort of the cachet of basically Microsoft, we own Flickr, horror.
Yeah, but can you imagine how the Flickr groups would react to that? And there's already protest groups. Well, there are still protest groups from when Yahoo bought them.
But I think if the choice was between have Flickr or have no Flickr, then people might go with the pragmatism side of things.
What if it was, say, another media or a media organization, an existing media organization? Because certainly, you know, large media organizations are using the pools that come out of Flickr. Wouldn't it just seem logical for a broadcaster or for a paper or somebody?
Change is just inevitable, isn't it? I mean, you know, I think we just have to get used to it.
It would be logical and smart for something like the Associated Press or one of those sorts of people to buy it.
Well, God forbid, Getty.
Well, yeah, I guess you'd be pretty sure you were right with your Flickr photos then. But, you know, if you looked at the pictures on the Barack Obama acceptance speech night, all that sort of stuff, which is
made me
fantastic.
Cry. It was amazing.
And a lot of the Mumbai coverage, which was first on Flickr, that's the sort of thing any news organisation would give their eye teeth for.
Yeah, it's underrated, actually, the power of Flickr. It's an incredibly valuable site, and I think Yahoo should be taking a lot more care of it.
But Yahoo's not able to take very much good care of anything at the moment, I've got to say. It's starting to look like one of those slow motion train wrecks.
Well,
Lycos is the model not to be followed here, but, you know, there was a time when Lycos was the big site in Europe. And where is it now?
Yeah, that is a very good point. It's a bit of a surprise when that's gone down the pan. However, these stories will certainly be on our tongues and our lips and various other appendages over the next however long.
Our bum-bums.
So you can keep up with these stories and more at guardian.co.uk/technology. It seems that the big boys are currently working out clever ways to extend their tendrils in every available pie, hoping that one or another of their ventures ensures that their bottom lines remain in the black. MSN, for example, the company that's historically been a portal to all the content on the web. I mean, really, that's effectively what it made its name as, and, you know, its reputation, has recently been speaking and, pushing its creative output. Now, Jemima, you had a nose around in their libraries. What did you find?
I did. Well, you know, there's actually a very big editorial operation at MSN UK, and I think it suffers this burden of this legacy of being sort of a portal website, you know, stuck on people's homepage when they buy Windows and they open Internet Explorer for the first time. So I wanted to go a bit further than that. I wanted to find out much more about all the extensive editorial team they have. They do news, they do entertainment, they have a big auto section, they have a really big advertising site, and they're also doing online video content for the first time. So I started by speaking to Matt Ball, who's the editor-in-chief, and I'm asking him just to give an overview of what the site does.
The MSN Windows Live Network in the UK has 28 million UK users. We offer a range of services from email, instant messenger, search, but also a fully-fledged content portal on the MSN side, which is the part that I run. That attracts about 20 million UK users a month, and it ranges from our news channel, our cars channel, our money channel, through to MSN Video, which has grown a lot recently. The old-style view of a portal is a bit old-fashioned for me these days. A while ago, I think portals were rather faceless to their users. They were perhaps rightly seen as aggregators a few years ago. These days, some of the portals, such as our own, have really invested in people and original content. And so you'll find our editor profiles, you'll find byline pieces and so on, as well as original videos and podcasts from the editorial team, just like any other media group.
You've got 38 of your own journalists, as well as more than 50 specialist freelancers who contribute to the site. But how does the content that you're producing differ from any of the main news brands like The Times, The Telegraph, The Guardian and the BBC?
Perhaps unlike newspaper sites, we're not here with a particular political angle or axe to grind. We take a more neutral approach. We're more interested in presenting the facts, setting up the debate, presenting both sides, either ourselves or commissioning pieces from both sides of a particular debate, and then offering users ways to discuss it via our message boards and so on, which in news are very well trafficked. In other areas, we do employ specialists and more and more pro bloggers these days as well, exclusive to us.
Hello?
Every game has its rules. I've never really liked games.
Hello?
MSN's strategy is original content, and Kirill is MSN's first move into online video. It's been made by big-name TV production firm Endemol, creators of Big Brother and Deal or No Deal. I asked Rob Crossan, portal business manager at MSN UK, responsible for video, about the response to Kirill so far. How many viewers were put off by having to download Silverlight first?
Tell me what to do.
Of course, there's always going to be some skepticism, but we're exploiting what Silverlight can do in terms of its deep zoom technology and also its high definition playout, which not many other codecs can actually do.
Now, this was an experiment for MSN, and it's the first really major piece of video you've done. Can you tell us what your user figures have been so far?
We've done about 750,000 streams so far, and we've seen over 300,000 users. We're aiming for 1 million streams. I think that's kind of a golden number that we have in our heads, but we've never done anything like this before, so we really didn't know what to expect.
So which aspects have gone down the best with the community then? Because the sci-fi community are a fussy bunch.
For us, it's really been about high production values. It's about keeping the audience guessing. And it's about hiding, you know, a whole bunch of content beyond the video and actually beyond the site. There are supporting blogs and video blogs. And it's that kind of detail that we're finding that users are really getting into. In fact, what we've seen, some users are asking us for more clues, for more additional content.
So it sounds like Kirill's sort of turning more from a video into a game.
Well, it could, couldn't it? At the moment, for us, it's a story. We're not really into the idea of the user defining the ending or anything like that. I think that's why we have script writers and why we've got companies like Endemol on board.
A 175-pound man can survive without water for up to 10 days, depending on temperature.
If that sounds like a very traditional media approach, it's probably down to Peter Bale, executive producer of MSN UK. The former editor of Times Online has made original content and editorial the top priority for MSN, and he told me why.
I believe it's a key way in which the portal can make itself more distinct from all competitors. And I think it's essential because the site needs to develop a stronger personality. And there are other voices out there. We need to develop a strong voice of our own amongst our writers.
Describe that voice then, because it sometimes seems that the MSN brand gets a bit lost by being overshadowed by Microsoft, which is not a brand people associate with content. It's a brand people associate with software.
Yeah, I'm not so sure that many of our readers necessarily associate us with Microsoft. I think they come to the MSN brand. Yes, they use other Microsoft products, but I don't think they necessarily feel that we are overwhelmed by the greater corporate brand and necessarily see us as part of that. I do think, though, that in certain areas of the site, we can have an independent view, a view where our stories explain rather than preach, and story really where they allow a bit more debate to occur than you might necessarily find in newspaper sites, for example.
So you're very UK-focused, and among general news sites, who are your competitors? Is it the broadsheet newspaper sites? Is it the BBC? Or is it specialist blogs? Who are your competitors?
I think in scale it would have to be the BBC, and of course the BBC is our competitor in all sorts of ways, just for plain eyeballs and obviously in video. The BBC is obviously also a very, very important partner. We take a lot of BBC content into our video channel, and obviously there's a bigger Microsoft relationship as well. We obviously don't have anything like that journalistic capacity, but you know, we have terrific partners in Reuters, PA, ITN, and other providers who give us a pretty impressive range of news, and then on top of that we can package it very effectively, adding maps, video, and really trying to tell the story a bit more comprehensively than perhaps they can find in other ways. At least that's the mission, really. Many days we achieve that, many days we don't achieve that.
Because you do very noticeably promote a lot of Microsoft services on the site. Is that a really key traffic driver?
It's a key traffic driver, yes. We benefit from a lot of Microsoft services as well. Windows Live Messenger is a fantastic messaging service. It has a huge user base in the UK, but it's not so much of a sales effort as showing them what products there are of benefit within that network. And yes, we do give people access to Hotmail directly from the MSN homepage, just because we know how important it is. You know, at the moment, that it happens to be Hotmail that we have there, but it wouldn't be beyond the realms of possibility to do what some others have done and offer other third-party email services as well. We don't currently do that, but that's definitely on the cards.
We're entering a very difficult period for publishers. We're going to see a lot of content sites being more and more aggressive about retaining their audiences and trying to build them. What is MSN going to focus on to try and make sure that it does the same, that it not only keeps its audience but keeps growing it, considering especially that it it's limited by geography because there are, you know, 39 other MSN sites for regions outside the UK.
We have probably not done enough to love and adore and entertain our audience, and we want them to log on and to enjoy more services while they're with us and to have a deeper experience with us. There's absolutely no doubt that we have to do more to engage that audience and keep them longer, offer them more pages. So that is going to mean investing in original content.
With so many projects, how does MSN decide where to go next? I asked Rob Crossan.
We would love to do something a little bit bigger, a little bit more grand scale, perhaps a TV tie-in for our next project. It's not something that we have a slate and we've said we're going to do X number of these projects a year. When the right project comes along, we'll take it on and make the most of it.
So Jemima, I've had a little look at it, but from your point of view, what is Kirrell like as a media, as a content output?
Well, it's sci-fi, basically. I think when they started, they were trying to capitalise on the huge interest around the Large Hadron Collider, and capitalise on the interest in science and tech and stuff. So they created a rather sort of barren, sort of futuristic, oppressive mini drama, really. But it had a well-known face, who's an actor called David Schofield, who you wouldn't necessarily know the name of, but he's been in Pirates of the Caribbean and Gladiator, and a very distinctive face, with very high production values, as they were quite keen to point out. It's not my cup of tea personally, but it's extremely well produced, and it's just very interesting that Microsoft are going down this route. I'm not sure it's a money spinner, but it's an interesting statement of intent.
Well, I think that the fact that it's actually produced and directed and basically created by Endemol is very interesting, because they're reaching out into a very well-established traditional media organization to bring in that content, aren't they?
Yes, exactly. I mean, Endemol are increasingly moving into the digital space and trying to do loads of different projects. I don't think it's never enough for me. I mean, I'm quite impatient with these things. I'd like to see companies doing really interactive location-based dramas with mobile and stuff. I just think there's huge potential there.
Good
marks, but, you know, probably could do better in the long run.
That it could actually just be ported over to television. It's not really utilising the facilities.
Well, I think they should aim higher than that myself, but yeah.
But even trying, you know, to have that interactive element.
Yes, which they were doing, actually. They were weaving bits of the plot in with kind of mystery blogs that were running for weeks beforehand that you didn't know were part of the drama. And then I think they were doing things with Instant Messenger and things, although I missed out on those.
So, Charles, from your point of view, is it better to be a content provider or a portal, especially in this shaky climate?
Actually, my position is that it's always better to be that neither is the better one. The money is all in being the people who own the distribution mechanism. Mm. If you own the telephone lines, then people are very fickle in what they want in terms of content, but they'll always want some way to get that content. Is it better to be the portal or to be the content provider? Well, Drudge doesn't generate any content. Google doesn't generate any content, but they both do pretty well. So in that sense, if you're a really great portal, then you can succeed. But equally, hey, Guardian's a content provider and we did all right.
Microsoft is a software company that tried to expand into web content purely to back up its advertising proposition.
But it sort of
wasn't. Now they're making original content, which is extremely expensive. And is that a sensible thing to do? I don't think it is.
But MSN's one of those hangovers from the fact that they thought that the internet wasn't going to be the wide internet. They thought it was going to be you would have a Windows computer and you would log into MSN, and that would be your destination. There'd be nowhere else you could go. Then the internet came along and slapped them upside the head.
Well, it's interesting because they are still working in that paradigm with things like Windows Live. Yeah. You know, that's very much a silo, a closed garden as well. So to see whether they will expand outside of that. Well, you can check it out for yourself at kirrell.uk.msn.com, which is a really long address. I'll say that again, kirrell.uk.msn.com. And do let us know what you think. And speaking of content, we've been following what you've been saying over the past week. And wow, it's a rich stream. What's been happening, Charles, in technology?
Well, it's all about flickers and layoffs and things like that. Two posts, actually, which I thought were great fun. The first one was about the fact that Last.fm is getting rid of its ball pool, as in all the plastic balls where they could dive in.
Apparently it's quite smelly.
Well, you know, you've got to cut back.
Well, that's when you have
these little things.
But C.S. Clark said, I don't understand how this saves them money. were they renting the balls? Are they planning to sell them on eBay? Possibly after they watch them. Just another example of why you always need to read the alt text on XKCD cartoons. To which Shrinky Dinky said, well, presumably someone realised that giving over an area of no doubt high-value real estate to 27,000 plastic balls, did they count them all, didn't look so good on the balance sheet. I haven't heard about this particular piece of Nathan Barleyism, and I had so much respect for Lawrence Devon.
Well, if they'd been clever, they could have created a new revenue stream by charging small children 50p to use it at the weekends.
Or grown-ups. I have a very funny story about once I was in the middle of Tennessee on a road trip, and I went into a ball pool at a certain large fast food chain that has ball pools, and I had the car keys in my pocket.
No!
And I lost the car keys.
Alex.
Oh, no, but I found some amazing things in there. I found a sock. I found God, because somebody had left their their cassette tape.
You need to have a T-shirt of it. I found God in a ball pit.
Found $6. It was amazing. So anyway, don't underestimate the ball pools.
There was one other which I really liked, which was about all the not death, but fired by PowerPoint. Which was about how Yahoo basically had instructed its managers and given them a PowerPoint in how to fire people. And Park Girl had a comment on this, which was, we had one of those future of the company presentations recently. Attempting to get to the first frame, the MD clumsily steps backwards in the sequence to reveal the final screen, the first line of which read, "There will be a reduction in the number of personnel." It was a real David Brent moment. Couldn't have scripted it better. Or worse, depending.
Oh, that sounds terrible.
Painful.
Cue spitballs. Fantastic. Well, over on the games blog, we've been debating the necessity of Home, which is a new PS3. Basically what it is, it's a virtual world that's very specific to Sony, very specific to the PlayStation 3. And they've been saying that, you know, if you go in there, you can have an avatar, you can chat with people, you can then join people and go directly into games, you can show off your trophies, et cetera, et cetera. Well, the votes at the minute seem to be quite split. Amiga says, you're all thinking too inside the box. This is, of course, because there was a lot of vitriol about this. Amiga, he or she says, I have the home beta and can tell you it's wicked. You haven't lived till you create an overweight virtual hooker who gyrates against people playing pool in the arcade or indulged in a bit of cyber sex next to the chessboards. Home is hilarious. I love it. On the other side, we've got Sheep 2 representing us, and he says there are three things that would improve Home. One, a gun shop. Two, the ability to headbutt. And three, some actual content. Ooh. So yes, there's not been a lot of positive words out there for Sony Home, so we'll see if they decide to maintain it. Jemima, what's happening over in digital content?
Well, we were writing about Chrome, the Google web browser, which has just come out of beta and managed to extract just one statistic from Google, which is that 10 million people have downloaded the browser since it launched, so it's in 100 days. A lot of people very quickly pointed out the same as Big Dave B. I downloaded it twice because it was corrupted the first time, installed it, tried it for a week, uninstalled it. Do I count among the 10 million? Good point. I should imagine a lot of people did that. Alan Evans said, I haven't downloaded or installed Chrome because, bluntly, Firefox ain't broke.
I don't know, it takes up a hell of a lot of my...
And after about 30 comments, Neuron said, Jack Schofield, MS fan, is probably hitting the bottle after reading this.
Jemima, you must do those. You have to. You have to do those every.
Well, you know, I'm going for an interview at Disney. You know, we'll see how it goes. No Disney, no bollocks to that.
I should just point out, actually, that Jack Schofield is now on Twitter.
Hey!
Wow!
We shall overtake the world.
Well, meanwhile, elsewhere in the Tech Weekly universe, and not on our Tech Weekly stream, though we do have one, we've had a vote from an unlikely place. Liam O'Connor kindly remarks, your podcast, and he says podcast, two words, I quite like that. He says, it's a highlight to my working week. Portrait painters love tech too, even if they are a bit old school. So thank you very much for that.
Hello, Liam.
Hi, Liam.
Can you send us some of your work, please?
Yes, please. That would be lovely. Excellent.
A picture of the podcasters at work, perhaps.
Yeah, as he imagines it. Can you imagine what that would be like?
Oh, I'd love to see it.
Is a podcast, is that like an iPod cast in Plaster of Paris?
Mm.
A podcast, as opposed to a podcast.
It may very well be.
Yes.
Whatever it is.
Answers in an email.
Not just in an email. Answers on our Flickr stream. No, yes. Yay. Put up your pictures of what you think the podcast looks like, what we look like as well. Though, of course, there are pictures of us, so you can
That's
take that
sort
as
of a
reference.
Bit of a giveaway, Alex.
You can take that as reference.
The photos of you doing the podcast.
Imagine if you will. And finally, as we're coming up to the end of our 2008 season, we're looking for your suggestions of content we should add to our 2008 review and our forward-looking 2009 preview. Suggest away on the blog at guardian.co.uk/techweekly or tweet, mail, Facebook, or Skype us. So many ways to get in touch. There really is no excuse. Go on, overwhelm us, and use them all at the same time. Wouldn't that be fun?
In this Thursday's Guardian Tech section, 2 years after we last looked at it, the new revised Top 100 sites. Where to get things done and find things out online. Almost all are new, and location-based services, collaborative tools, and video have all exploded in importance. We ask if the PlayStation 3 is in trouble, its sales aren't exciting people, and Sony is cutting jobs when Nintendo and Microsoft's Xbox division aren't. And we find a snow leopard showing off its spots. Next month, Apple's Steve Jobs will present the new version of Mac OS X. Find out what will be included. This and more in Thursday's tech section with The Guardian.
That's it from this week's Credit Crunch edition of Tech Weekly. But don't fret, we hope we've given you ample fodder to protect yourself from personal recession. Thanks to our guests, Ryan Carson and Rob, Matt and Peter from MSN. Plus, of course, to Jemima, Charles and producer Scott. We're back next week with our year in review, so don't forget about us when you get a shiny new MP3 player or perhaps a second-hand one under the holiday tree, bush, candle, menorah or whatever you use to celebrate this midwinter holiday. I've been Alex Kratowski. Have a great week. Thanks for listening.